I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, September 6th, 2020, and this is episode 84 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing is that I wrote the last chapter of the last book in the Earthsinger Chronicles, Requiem of Silence. I'm not quite done yet, but I did write the last chapter, and it's a chapter that I feel good about. It's a chapter that I felt closure with as I was writing. A few weeks ago, in one of the events I had for the launch of Cry of Metal and Bone, I think it was K.R. Sonoma Rivera who had asked about, I was asking her about, you know, finishing a series because she had finished her trilogy, and she asked me if I had felt that sort of cathartic feeling. And at that point, I had not. Like, I had a whole draft, you know, that I'd turned in, but I just felt so many mixed feelings about that. And this revision has, in my mind, gone really well. I'm happy with what I have. And I got to that last chapter and I was like, oh, I feel that. I feel that thing now. I was reading it over. I was like, do I like this last line? Is it the best last line? Maybe not, but it feels good to me. You know, it feels like, no, it just felt right. And I texted my family and I texted my friends and I was just like, yeah, I wrote the last chapter and I'm just kind of feeling that thing where it's sort of bittersweet. It's like the end, you know, closing the door on the story, trying to leave a few windows open for, you know, potential. You don't want to wrap everything up completely. But yeah, this story that I set out to tell 7 years ago is basically done. Now, what I still have left to do are the epigraphs, the chapter epigraphs. I'm going back and forth. I'd had an idea in my head about what they were. So in the whole series, every other book, they've been from in-world books, you know, fictional books in this universe. And there was an idea that I had for this one, but then I was like, how am I going to write them? There are 58 chapters, and I just don't know if I have 58 entries from this book inside of me. So then I was thinking about alternatives. And so this last chapter I did on Thursday. And so I was like, I'm just going to give myself a few days off of Requiem. Still working on Echoes of Ash and Tears, the third novella. But yeah, these epigraphs, I'm going to start writing them theoretically today. Maybe Monday. I still haven't quite settled on them yet. So the first book where the epigraphs for each chapter are from collected folktales, and they're sort of strange little folktales featuring these nine characters, these animals that are the heads of the houses. The second book, In Whispers of Shadow and Flame, the epigraphs are from the Book of Unveiling, which is a book that is found in the novel and that tells a story. So all of the epigraphs come together to tell a united story. And that's similar with the epigraphs of Cry of Metal and Bone. I guess kind of both of them, more so for Cry of Metal and Bone. I was thinking of something like a Gilgamesh, you know, like an epic tale that is sort of also the founding mythology of this country. In this case, it was Yali. And so the fourth one, I have an idea. And it's closer to the original folk tales from book one, but those had a very specific perspective, you know, like I was trying to create folk tales from a fantasy culture, and they would expand the world so that you would just give a larger breadth to the world building. So you can kind of see what are the stories that they tell their children, what are their kind of myths, what are the proverbs that they kind of go back to, or that are just around, you know. And I used a lot of different inspiration for that, from Aesop's Fables to Khalil Gibran to some other folk tales I have from different cultures around the world. And it's like, I don't want to do the same thing again. And I don't have another 58 of those in me. And this idea that I have, something bothering me about it. And I think the thing is that for Song of Blood and Stone, those folk tales were a little bit off. Like, I feel like there's wisdom in there, but there's also like bizarre wisdom that maybe is not a good idea to follow. I was doing that on purpose. So I wanted to be like, that's good. And then the next chapter would be like, what is going on here? Like, what's the message? I just wanted to be a little off. But now in the fourth book, like, arcs have been completed. And I feel like if I'm going to go that route and do something folktale-esque or proverb-esque, I actually made a list of the different types of folklore, you know, that are present in cultures. So like songs, nursery rhymes, curses, prayers, things like that. Like, could I do any of those? And what's interesting is when I originally did Whispers, before I had the idea to do the epic poem that is the epigraphs now, I was mixing it up a lot. I had all kinds of stuff. So I had nursery rhymes, I had lullabies, I had songs from different cultures. I had bits and pieces of just things from all different kinds of texts that were within the world. And my editor was like, oh, well, you know, the first book was really unified. Can we do more of a unified thing for these epigraphs? So I went back and I changed them, and I'm really happy with how they turned out. I like them. But I do have all of this other like flotsam and jetsam around the world that at some point, you know, I might put together in like a bonus thing. But so I've experimented with things like that before. I thought about doing a letter, and I actually, the original epigraphs for Cry of Metal and Bone were in two letters from two different characters. And then during copy edits, I changed that. I was like, no, that's not right. I don't like that anymore. And I'm glad I did, because those letters would have made it very difficult to make the pivot I had to make with Echoes. Anyway, I'm trying to work this out as I talk, which is probably not the best idea. I haven't figured that out yet, so I can't quite celebrate being done with the book until I finish all of the epigraphs. And then I'm going to print everything out and do a final read through on paper just to catch, one, to catch like little, you know, errors before it goes to copy edits, but mostly because this book has gone through so much, and I'm not sure if everything that's in it, if everything that's supposed to be in it made it in. Like, I'm having some, you know, my critique partners read it over, and I'm giving them chapters as I go. And one of them was like, oh, well, how did you explain this? And I'm like, well, yeah, it's because of this. And I was like, did I cut that out? It might have been cut out, that explanation, which I really want to be in the book, but then I couldn't find it. And I was like, well, where did she say that? It's one of three scenes. And I was like, well, I'll just find it in the read through, and hopefully it's there. And if it's not, I'll have to put it back. So there's things like that where when you touch it so much, you can accidentally cut out things because I had to move things around. So the last step is print it out on paper. And that's where my pre-hole punched paper comes in. I buy pre-three-hole punched paper and print it out on that and put it in a notebook, and then I read it as quickly as I can. So a book of this length will take at least 4 days to read all the way through with a careful eye, because it's not just reading for pleasure. It's critically reading and trying to hold the whole story in my head and make sure that everything is there and it's coming together and there's no big mistakes. And I really have to hold myself back from changing words, because I find that I will change words in one pass and then change it back in another pass, you know, like little words, you know, like he looked at her, and then I'll change, oh no, he gazed at her, you know, the stupid stuff like that makes no difference at all and nobody cares about, and I probably don't care about it because I forget a couple weeks later and I change it back to a different word. And part of that, sometimes those words are about musicality and about flow of the language, and also about, you know, characters using, you know, one character will use maybe and one character will use perhaps. And if I had more time, I'd probably do another pass just for that kind of stuff and that kind of voice stuff, but I never have time for that. So that's like pie in the sky stuff. But yeah, I feel like when I'm making these small word changes, it's about the musicality And I guess sometimes it sounds better one way and sounds better another way on a different day. So that's when I know I'm tweaking too much and I need to let it go because it makes absolutely no difference. But I want to wait and print them out with the epigraphs on them so I can read through the chapter with the epigraph and get the whole vibe. So I will probably be printing it out in stages as I do the epigraph, do a few chapters at a time, print them out, reread them. That will be the plan for this final pass before I turn it in. And I hope that works out. I have also been struggling a bit with Echoes with the third novella, mostly because I don't do my best work under lots of pressure. Like, I like to have the deadline and the pressure to motivate me, but in times past, if I was feeling this way, I would get more time. I tried to get more time, and I could not get more time for this novella. So that leaves me with the deadline, and this story just giving me troubles, and I'm not feeling the way I want to feel about it. At the end of the day, I've been reading it over and it's clean and it's fine and I think it'll be okay. I'm not sure it will be exactly what I want it to be though, and that's my fear. And whether that's my perfectionism or my, I don't know what it is, something about me, that it's like other people can say it's okay, but if I don't feel it, then I don't feel it and I don't feel good about it. I'm getting it to a place where even if it's not at the place I want it to be, I'll be proud of it. But it's like, I always know, wow, if I just had another few weeks, I could have. And part of it is just the story. I've had to change some things. I've changed my mind about some things. And this is the last thing I'm writing in the series, even though it's the second to last entry. So I have history. I'm not going to say I painted myself into a corner, but I created a box in which the story has to live. And that's a good thing, usually. In this case, because of some of the changes that I made, that I felt I had to make, and I think they're the right choice, it just leaves me feeling discombobulated, I guess. I wish I could be more specific. When the book comes out, I will do a whole episode about what I'm actually talking about here. So expect that, I guess. I don't know. This is coming out in November, I think we said. Sometime in November, I will give you all the spoilers about what I'm talking about. But for now, I'm moving forward and I'm cutting stuff. I'm redoing the plot as I go. It's kind of crazy. Like, I'm doing pantsing. I'm trying to let the intuition rule me a little bit more because I feel like this box I'm in is constricting me more than it's helping me. You know, a lot of times limitations foster creativity. And I think that's the case now. I mean, I think at the end of the day, when I finish this, it will be because I had to figure out how I'm going to stretch and fill every part of this box and not overflow it and not break things apart, but still manage to work within the previous books and the things that I've set up. The stuff that happens in the fourth book, because this novella is a lead-in of sorts to the fourth book, and still make this a satisfying story that both stands alone and works for people who've read everything else. And it's just a lot of things that this story has to do, all while being in a different part of the world that we haven't seen in this level of detail before. So it's more world building than I've had to do. I had to do a lot of world building for Hush of Storm and Sorrow, the second novella, because it's about the Ronians. This one is even more than that, because that one didn't take place in Rhone. It was a character, you know, one of the main characters was Ronian. So I had to delve into their culture and their values and create a whole martial arts system, you know. But this, we're like 500 years ago. We're dealing with the cave folk. And I have to imagine, you know, in the main books, the cave folk have died out. Basically, there's only a handful of them left. This novella takes place during when their society was still thriving. It was on the tail end of that, but so I have a whole culture, I have a whole society, I have religious practices and values and much more world building than I probably should have set myself up for this novella, especially with this timeline. And that's all part of it too, in addition to the story, making sure the arcs are right. And yeah, all those things that you have to juggle when you write a book, a fantasy book at least. But in every book, you know, just there's different levels. So yeah, that's what I'm, it's the current challenge that I'm facing in the writing world. I've been thinking a lot about structure and something, because I'm replotting the story again and running it through my worksheets and making sure that it works, that it holds water. And I remember I was having a conversation about Black moments, and one of my friends was like, oh, well, you know, Courtney Milan had an interview where she was talking about Black moments. And I think it was on Smart Bitches, Trashy Books. And I haven't found it yet, but I just did a Google search and I found some tweets where she was talking about it a little bit. And oh, and there's a recent interview with her in Entertainment Weekly where she mentions it. And I'll link to that too, because Black moments stress me out. So if you're not familiar, in the traditional romance timeline, not just romance, actually the traditional novel or story structure, at the end of Act Two, there's the all is lost moment. I'm sorry, they call it something else in other story methods, but all is lost, the dark moment, the black moment, which is where everything falls apart. So in a romance novel, it's usually the hero and heroine are torn apart. They break up. They've had some sort of terrible fight or misunderstanding, or forces have kept them apart. One of them almost dies. Something terrible happens. It's kind of what you've been building up to the whole book. And then Act Three is about resolving that. And I've been reading a couple of books, and I think I've said this before. Sometimes I stop reading when I sense the black moment is coming, because it's always, I'm going to say it's always darkest before the dawn, but it's always dawnest before the dark. Like in many romance novels, everything is happy and they're wonderful, and you're at 75% and you're like, this can't last. I know how these books work. They're going to have, something's going to tear them apart. And sometimes I actually just stop reading then. I'm like, okay, they're happy now. This is my ending for this book. I can't go through a lot of drama right now. I don't want to read it. I think that was one of the reasons why I was like on Twitter asking for low angst books. And by that, I sort of meant low conflict in that way. There are some writers who do very gentle dark moments, and I appreciate them. I used to read a lot of Marie Force's books, and they were just the gentlest dark moments you can imagine. It was very pleasant to read. And then some writers don't use them at all. And I think that is what Courtney Milan was saying, that it's not always necessary. And it's not like we learn that we have to have it, but we really don't. Another author that doesn't really have black moments, at least in the books that I've read of hers, is Christina C. Jones. In her books, generally, the couple has struggled so much all through the book to get together that by the end, like, I'm sure there's, and I have to go back. I really want to go back and like read them with a fine tooth comb and see if I can analyze. But by the end, they've struggled so much that you just have a nice ending. Like, you don't need one more bigger, an even bigger, badder, blacker, darker moment. They've been struggling the whole time. And I kind of like that. I like story structure because I like structure. That's, my brain works better that way. And I found in my early writing that I was not able to finish anything without a structure, really. I taught myself how to plot at a certain point and, you know, bought tons of craft books, which I still buy and love and really enjoy. But I mean, I think it's valid and it's worthwhile to sort of question why you need these things. Why do you need this dark bleakness that honestly stresses me out sometimes? Like, I'm reading a book now, I'm at like 77% and I took a break. I was enjoying it. I'd read most of it in one sitting and I was like, okay, the black moment's coming. I don't know if I'm in the mood for that right now. I was reading reviews of this other book that, you know, I had come across it. I was like, oh, do I want to read this? Let me check out the reviews. And some of them were scathing because apparently in this book, and I don't even remember what book it is now, but the hero and heroine at the black moment, they're apart for 8 years. I have a 3-week rule. I can handle the hero and heroine coming at that moment being apart for 3 weeks, and then they have to get back together. A month is pushing it. these books where it's 6 months later, a year later, they meet each other on the street and they realize, like, no, I don't want them to be apart for that long. 8 years. And you could tell in the reviews, people were not having it. Like, some people like it, of course. There's different strokes for different folks, but. And I was like, oh no, oh no, no, no. I'm not reading this book. 8 years. There was another, I'm not going to spoil it. It was a very popular contemporary romance where I think they're apart for something like a year and a half. And I was big mad about that. So yeah, what's my point? My point is that I am thinking about structure and thinking about if you have enough conflict throughout the novel, do you need this bigger, badder conflict at 75, 80% to blow things apart and then come back together? How else can you show the character arc has progressed, show the external conflict is getting resolved without having to destroy people's hearts at 75% to build them back up again? I really enjoy when there's a romance novel where you don't understand how these characters are going to get together. And I think that's possible. Is it possible to do without the dark moment? I mean, that's a good question. Because, you know, even Courtney is like, sometimes you need it. You know, there's, she's not saying never have it. But the idea that you have to have it, that it is a mandatory part of the story structure for a romance, we should question that. And that makes perfect sense. And I guess it's only in Western narrative structure. There was a class that I didn't take in college. And whatever class, everybody else read Chinua Achebe, Things Fall Apart. And I never read that, but I remember reading about it and how, like, especially African books don't tend to follow the structure that we're familiar with, you know, the Western novels. And there was a book that I read when I was taking a workshop, and it was a Japanese novel, and it was about a woman who worked in a factory and making pre-prepared meals. And there was a whole, like, was it a murder mystery? I'm having a hard time recalling it, but it was Japanese and it was a different structure. It was more literary, definitely, but it was really good. If I can find the name of it, I will put it in the show notes or I'll let you know later, but it definitely had a different structure. And I don't do a lot of reading of like other, like translations and books from other cultures. So that's something to consider too. Like, I believe that the structure that we're taught in all of its various permutations is in large part how humans understand story. I think that intuitively, even stories that don't follow the structure exactly, follow it in broad strokes because it's sort of just a natural progression. Beginning, middle, end, you know, you start, you go somewhere, you come back. But I do have to examine my own proclivities towards why these dark moments stress me out and why I'm not always here for them. You know, I want to write the books that I want to read. I want to write the books that sort of satisfy something within me and scratch an itch within me. And so even as structure has helped me tell stories and complete them, and I think it's made me a better writer than if I had never done any craft work and studied all these things, but I don't want to be locked into them. And in the future, I have to look at sort of where the story is pulling me and what structure is and really how to use it and not be bound by it, you know, not be restricted, have it be a structure, not a stricture. So yeah, that has all been going through my mind. Speaking of which, I watched a movie on Netflix last night. It's called Love Jacked. It stars Amber Stevens, who is one of my brother's friends. She was on Greek with him. And I was like, oh, I'll watch a movie with Amber. She's super sweet. It was a really fun movie. I will recommend it with caveats because it is a little out there. It takes the trope, which is one of my favorite tropes, of the fake fiance. And it's like, they wrote a fake fiance story. It feels like the person who wrote it hadn't ever read any other fake fiance stories. Like, they weren't steeped in the trope. And so they take it super far. And I was like, it was one of those movies where I was like, I have no idea how they're going to resolve this. What is going to happen at the end of this movie? Like, I know the things that usually happen in these movies, but we're like, we got 20 minutes left and they have just gone so far out of pocket with this trope. I laughed out loud. I thought it was hilarious. It might be mildly offensive. If someone is listening to this is African and watches this movie, let me know if you were offended by it, because I wasn't quite sure. It's very cute. It's very light. I found it extremely funny in parts. It's a little bit wiggly, you know, like it's not super tight in terms of narrative, but it's still a lot of fun. And so check out Love Jacked on Netflix if you're in the mood for a lighthearted fake fiance romance. So that's it for me for this week. I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.